This is Mark Movsesian. I'm the co-director of the Center for Law and Religion at St. John's, and I'm joined once again by my friend and colleague and the center's other co-director, Mark DiGirolami, for an episode of Legal Spirits, which is our podcast series on issues and cases in law and religion. You can find past episodes archived on our website, lawandreligionforum.org, and also at Apple and Google. Well, Mark, today we're going to return to the issue of COVID occupancy restrictions for houses of worship. And we actually have done a podcast on this in the past, but the issue keeps coming up. SCOTUS has issued three rulings on emergency petitions this year. The latest was just in the last few weeks. And there are more emergency petitions that are currently before the court, one of them from California in a case called South Bay Pentecostal Church, and one from Nevada in a case called Calvary Chapel. Both those cases actually have been to the court already over the summer, and there are a bunch of cases in the lower federal courts as well. So today we're going to talk about the latest decision from the court, Roman Catholic Diocese of Brooklyn versus Cuomo. So that's a case with some local interest, Mark, for you and me here in Queens. And this was decided just a few weeks ago by the Supreme Court at the preliminary injunction stage. And it's an interesting opinion. There are also some interesting concurring and dissenting opinions in the case. We're going to talk about them. And we'll also speak briefly about some other cases that are in the pipeline at the court. And finally, we'll spend a little time speculating what these cases might mean going forward, and in particular, why this issue has generated so much controversy in the legal academy and elsewhere. So that's the roadmap for this podcast. Mark, why don't you begin by introducing our listeners to the most recent case, Roman Catholic Diocese of Brooklyn versus Cuomo.
Okay, great. So, and you're right. These cases, Mark, they seem to be popping up all over the case. They're coming fast and furious. It's a little bit hard to keep up with them. In addition to the cases that you mentioned, there's another one that was just where cert was granted, vacated, and remanded, for a case in California, whose name actually escapes me at the moment, but that one, which involves Governor Newsom's orders in California, was on emergency petition to the Supreme Court. Also, it's now back at the court. So there's a lot of activity going on with these kinds of cases right now, and we'll talk a little bit about that. But
and they're all very fact specific too, so it's hard to get a real categorical sense of things.
They're very fact specific, and the facts are changing quickly. Also, because, of course, as COVID in the country is getting worse in general, maybe hopefully in the next few weeks to a month it'll start to get better. They may be relaxed, these restrictions. So it's hard to keep up with the changes. And you're right, there's just a lot of action going on. Anyway, this case, Roman Catholic Diocese of Brooklyn against Cuomo, is about, these are claims by the Brooklyn Catholic Diocese and an Orthodox Jewish institution, which is called Agudath Israel of America. And the claim is that the COVID restrictions on occupancy that were created and imposed by New York's governor, Andrew Cuomo, violate the free exercise clause. And the case, again, this is now a couple of weeks ago, was before the Supreme Court on an emergency application for preliminary injunction, right? So this is at a comparatively early stage in the proceedings. A lot of these cases are coming to the court at this very, very early stage. They're coming to a particular justice who is on the kind of these motions, and then the justice is referring them, at least many of them, to the full court. So what happened here? Well, Governor Cuomo imposed restrictions on attendance at worship services, as well as other restrictions, through the use of color-coded zones. And what were these zones? Well, so-called red zone restrictions limit occupancy to 10 people, while in the orange zone, it's 25 people. And then there's another one, the yellow zone, which is 50 people. Maybe there are other colors, Mark. I don't know. Do you know about the other colors?
Well, living in Queens, we're in and out of the color zones here, but I believe that St. John's University, our university, I think is in the yellow zone, has been for some time.
Okay, good. And I suppose that makes sense also because I've been teaching in class. I can have more than 25 people in a single room at the same time, but probably not more than 50 people at the same time. My classes are actually divided between 40 and 37 people.
Yeah, so as I say, this case has some real strong local interest for us at the Center for Law and Religion.
Okay, so the challenge of the claimants goes both to discriminatory treatment, in that Agudath Israel says the governor has made various disparaging comments about Orthodox Judaism in connection with these restrictions, and that he's actually purposefully kind of gerrymandered the zone so as to include Orthodox Jewish communities. That's one side of things. And by the way, similar claims have been made against the mayor of New York City, who is out there in making these comments and so on.
Right. Very, very specifically directed at Orthodox Jewish communities.
Right. So that's on the one hand. And then also the claim goes to a kind of issue of unfair application of the zone rules, that these zone rules, that they're whatever the interests of the government are, they sort of, there's no rhyme or reason to what's going on with respect to the designations being made. So on the second claim, this sort of no rhyme or reason claim, both religious claimants argue that the governor and his rules are treating comparable secular institutions far more generously than religious institutions. So if listeners are remember, with respect to other podcasts that Mark and I have done on this issue, there's always this very important baseline question about the comparator, right? So what are we comparing? What is the legitimate comparison point or comparison to be making when we're talking about churches? And that's certainly here in this case too. So what happened? Well, the court issued a per curiam opinion. Per curiam, for the listeners who don't know the word, basically means there is no single author of the opinion, but instead the it's like the opinion was authored by all of the justices that are signing it. It was signed by five justices, and the court agreed that at least at this stage in the proceedings, the religious claimants were likely to prevail on the merits, which is the most important part of the preliminary injunction calculus. And at least, I don't know how you felt, Mark, but in what I thought was a fairly dryly and tightly written opinion, understated, possibly authored, I thought, by Justice Alito, actually.
I agree with that. There's some linguistic cues that suggest it's Justice Alito. And also, if you look at the write-up, it sort of seems like it was Justice Alito, but we don't know, of course.
We don't know. But the court said this. It said, the disparaging comments by the governor certainly can be interpreted as targeting religious groups in violation of the Free Exercise Clause. But the court was kind of brief on this point, and it said, look, even if we set those to the side, the color zone rules are not neutral because they single out religious organizations for especially bad treatment by comparison with other organizations.
Right, because it all had to do with essential versus non-essential businesses, right, in these different zones.
Right. So in the red zone, the rules make a distinction between essential and non-essential businesses. And while non-essential or inessential businesses, like churches, I guess, right, Mark, at least under the rules, are yes, limited to 10 occupants, essential businesses can admit as many people as they like.
Right. And how about the orange zones?
Okay, so that's even in the red zone. And by the way, essential businesses under the rules include things like acupuncture facilities, campgrounds, garages, and others. Okay, so that's one issue. Now, in the orange, you ask about the orange zone. In the orange zone, while religious institutions are limited to 25 people, even other businesses that are designated as non-essential have discretion over how many to admit. So, and I think, at least in my view, this was one of the more problematic parts of the order. So I will talk a little bit about this. I have some sort of mixed views about what's rational and what's not, but even within the orange zone and within the designation of non-essential businesses, where ordinarily you have discretion, churches didn't have discretion with respect to the number of admits. So as an example, restaurants, which are in orange zones, these are non-essential businesses, and they have this kind of discretion, while houses of worship, also inessential, also in the orange zone, did not have that discretion. And so the per curiam court said, look, this is not neutral as respects religious institutions, and therefore the color scheme has to survive strict scrutiny, right? Mark, we've talked about strict scrutiny on this podcast many times, right? In conjunction with free exercise, with RFRA and so on. But the idea is states have to have a compelling interest in whatever rules they are applying that is narrowly tailored to achieve that interest.
Right. I just want to say, here's a debate, Mark, you and I sometimes have. The court has not been clear always whether a non-neutral regulation is just flat out unconstitutional or whether it has to go through strict scrutiny. That was an issue in Masterpiece Cake Shop. I think these cases, which are all interlocutory, you know, and emergency appeals, but in all these cases, the court seems pretty clearly to say that strict scrutiny is going to be required in these cases, that it's not just flat out unconstitutional.
That's true, although one does tend to wonder, once a rule is not neutral, whether it will ever really be able to survive strict scrutiny. But perhaps it is the case right. that some non-neutral rules that seem to target religion can. That's an interesting debate, perhaps for another time. But you are quite right, Mark. In Masterpiece Cake Shop, after the court found non-neutrality, it just sort of went straight to holding the rule unconstitutional. By comparison with, for example, a case like the Lukumi Babalu case, also authored by Justice Kennedy, where Justice Kennedy at least included a kind of pro forma analysis of strict scrutiny.
Yeah, we're going to see when they decide Fulton this term what they have to say about all of that. But at least, I mean, the court is hardly consistent in this area. Anyway, here the court said that the New York State rules do not survive strict scrutiny, right? Why was that, Mark?
Right. So did not survive strict scrutiny. And look, remember, we've got the compelling interest prong and the narrowly tailored prong. The court said, of course, curbing the spread of COVID is a compelling interest. But the regulations really fell on the narrowly tailored prong. The court said the regulations are much more restrictive than in any jurisdiction that it has seen, including some that the court reviewed a few months ago in the California, the first California case. There are a few California cases actually rolling around, but yeah. In the first one. And more importantly, and given, and this is something I think the court really did emphasize, given the very small incidence of COVID in religious institutions in New York and the various safety measures that had been adopted by these institutions and had been shown to be effective, the court said, look, there are many other less restrictive rules that would have achieved the state's interest. For example, the state could tie occupancy limits to the size of the building. Some of these churches, a number of them, can seat as many as 500 people. Some of them can seat as many as 1,000 people. The court said, look, it doesn't really make very much sense to limit their occupancy to 25 with no discretion at all in light of the fact that they've shown themselves to be capable of adopting a reasonable safety precautions.
Yeah, you know, Mark, there's another issue in all these cases too, a kind of a mootness issue. It ties to what you were saying earlier about how these restrictions keep changing all the time as the epidemic waxes and wanes. And I guess we should just make a footnote about this. There's an argument in this case picked up by the dissenters. It appears in some of the other cases the court has handled too, that, you know, because these rules can change all the time, really these are, and often do change before the court has a chance to rule on them. These are really moot cases and the court shouldn't be deciding them. I'm not that persuaded by that argument, Mark, are you? Because, I mean, this is what I think you would call, you know, repetitive and evading review kind of cases, if I remember from my Fed courts class.
Yeah, no, I actually am with you on that. I didn't find that argument persuasive. It's an argument that seemed to have persuaded the Chief Justice, but there's very, very little that interferes with the governor's just sort of crossing back and forth between different zones at different times. Right? So yes, the governor, you know, in preparation for this exact hearing, changed the religious institution's designation from orange to yellow, but there's nothing to stop him from changing them right back to orange the second that they leave the Supreme Court. And, you know, these things do take time, right, to get hearings in front of the Supreme Court, to get in front of them, to get your issues argued. During that time, you know, people can be denied their rights if in fact they are their rights, if the court concludes that they do have a right to do these kinds of things. So I'm with you that that wasn't a particularly persuasive claim, but you're right that it was picked up both by the by all the dissenters, I think.
Okay, so that was the per curiam opinion. It was joined by five justices, Justices Alito, Thomas, Gorsuch, Kavanaugh, and Barrett, holding that at least at this stage, the petitioners have a likelihood of success, that these New York rules actually do violate the free exercise clause. There were a few interesting solo opinions. For example, there was a concurrence by Justice Gorsuch, which got a lot of attention, largely, I think, because of the rhetoric, Mark. He really came out swinging in this case against the dissenters.
Yeah, that's right. And not just against the dissenters. His first target was actually Governor Cuomo. So he listed examples, again, like we said, acupuncturists, liquor stores, bicycle shops, which have no restrictions within the orange zones. And he said, quote, "Who knew public health would so perfectly align with secular convenience?" Question mark, right? And there were other zingers like this on the merits, right? I mean, you probably saw some of these in the opinion yourself, Mark, right? So,
right. "We cannot shelter in place when the Constitution is under attack."
Yeah, he has a penchant for sort of, how to put it, flowery expressions like this, I think. But anyway.
He certainly ticked off, I think, Chief Justice Roberts. We'll get to Justice Roberts in a second. But so that was one concurrence. And really, Justice Gorsuch was basically accusing the dissenters of, you know, being kind of afraid to challenge executive power, state executive power during an epidemic. Justice Kavanaugh also concurred separately. He was a lot nicer, or I shouldn't say a lot nicer. He was a lot more congenial with regard to the dissenters. He just said, the court members of the court disagreed as to the timing of the injunction and the issue of mootness. I'll make just a footnote. It looks like Justice Kavanaugh has adopted the most favored nation status rule that academics like Doug Laycock have advocated, in which says that the government must give religious entities the same generous treatment that the government gives to other entities. And so he said, you know, once a state creates a favored class of businesses, as New York has done in this case, the state must justify why houses of worship are excluded from that favored class, which is an interesting way of looking at things.
All right, so there are a few dissents here, actually. Chief Justice Roberts had a solo dissent. He responded, I think the point of that dissent was really to respond to Justice Gorsuch. He really, I think, dismissed Justice Gorsuch's rhetoric. He said, "We're not sheltering in place while the Constitution is under attack." Justice Gorsuch had really gone after Chief Justice Roberts for his previous concurrence in the California case involving a case with respect to a doctrinal issue involving an older case called Jacobson that we've talked about before. And I think it was actually kind of interesting to see that exchange between those two justices. It was about as sharp as I have seen between two justices on this court, at least in recent memory.
Yes, a lot of commentators picked that up, and of course they're both conservatives too.
Yes, although it seems to me with very, very different jurisprudential styles and interests. But in any event, that's perhaps something for another podcast. But something to watch, I think. Listeners might look at the exchange between those two justices in particular in future cases. You had other dissents. Justices Breyer, Kagan, and Sotomayor dissented. They differed with the Chief Justice in as much as they would have denied the injunction even if the claimants had still been in the orange and red zones. So while the Chief Justice, really, this was an issue of sort of procedure, that he thought the case was moot at this point, not so for Justices Breyer, Kagan, and Sotomayor. Sotomayor, in fact, authored a dissent that just Justice Kagan joined. I think her dissent shows just how distant the justices are from one another on the issue that we mentioned earlier about the right comparator. We've talked about this before, Mark.
I think you and I may have a little difference of opinion on this. I think this is an issue in the case that the quote unquote conservatives need to pay more attention to. And that is that you can't talk about essential businesses, inessential businesses, and so on. It really is you know, apparently the epidemiologists tell us that the really dangerous context for COVID spread is a setting in which large groups of people gather, speak, and sing in close proximity, which would be not only church services, but lectures, concerts, movie showings, spectator sports, theatrical performances. Those are the comparators. And as to those, churches are treated the same as secular gatherings. In fact, Justice Sotomayor said, New York treats religious gatherings more favorably. And I think this is a real, at least for me, this is a real issue in these cases.
Yeah, no, I think we do see that this issue slightly differently, especially in light of the fact that restaurants are put in this category. When people go to restaurants, generally speaking, they have to take their masks off to eat. That's not the case in churches. There are studies showing that schools, which are precisely gatherings of large numbers of people, are not super spreader kinds of events. So if you want to say, or if somebody wants to say, well, we can show you that the science is really clear that schools and restaurants are much safer than churches, that's one thing. But on the other hand, look, I mean, these studies, they too are coming out fast and furious, and it's a little bit difficult to know what to rely on, what not to rely on. Follow the science really can depend at times on which science it is that you're interested in following.
Right. We'll get into this in a little bit. But of course, you might say, just because of what you say, the science is evolving fast and furious. This is precisely the sort of case in which judges ought to stand to the side and let the public health authorities figure it out. But we'll talk about that in just a second.
And just one other thing on that point, and that is Justice Gorsuch, in my view, while I have some differences with respect to at least his tone and some of the points that he made, I do think he makes a strong point, or at least a reasonable point, in saying, okay, we're a year into this now, right? Or almost a year into it. It's different than when we were 3 weeks into it, right? I mean, so at a certain point, it is true that you either have to show that there's a consensus about these issues or not. And if there's not a consensus, then I think you just can't go on sort of into a sort of infinity and an infinite time going forward where people are denied their rights.
Okay, so listeners, this is good for you to hear that here at the Center for Law and Religion, we have frank and candid exchanges of views. Okay, there are some other cases. We don't have time to get into all of them. There are other cases bubbling around at the court. There's the case Mark mentioned a little while ago from California that was granted, in which cert was granted and the judgment vacated and remanded from California. There's a Sixth Circuit case involving schools. There are a couple of other cases which are right now, in which right now cert is pending. One of them is called South Bay Pentecostal Church. This is a San Diego church that petitioned for an injunction over the summer. The church lost by a vote of 5-4. The church is now back because there are new rules, and the church, I think, is maybe hoping the case will come out differently now. And then there's Calvary Chapel, which was another case decided over the summer. This is out of Nevada. This is a case in which a church challenged the Nevada governor's COVID restrictions and pointed out that casinos were allowed to be open, but churches were not. And that got a dissent from Justice Alito. The court denied a request for an injunction, but there was a dissent. These were both 5-4 cases. They're both back up again now because I think, as I say, the churches think maybe that the vote's going to come out differently now, and it may be a 5-4 vote. But the 5-4 votes may be flipped at this point. Okay, so Mark, let's talk a little bit about that now. We can use that to lead into a bigger discussion about the broader significance of these cases. Because as we said, there's a lot of attention to these cases, a lot of heat generated by them. Why is that? I mean, why are these cases getting so much attention now? And I guess there are a few reasons we can think about. I'll just start off, Mark, then you can chime in. We are facing a once-in-a-century epidemic. There are 280,000 Americans who have died so far. Just this week, we have a record number of hospitalizations. People are predicting a shortage of ICU beds nationwide. That's a big issue. Another issue, I think, is, Mark, let's not be timid about saying this, there's a new composition of the court. Justice Ginsburg passed away over the summer. She's been replaced by Justice Barrett. Well, I think that changed the outcome in the New York case. And if the outcomes are different now in the California and Nevada cases, I think that's going to be the reason, too. We have a new justice, and the vote is going to be 5-4, but it's going to flip the other way. Mark, what do you think?
Yeah, no, I think all of that makes sense to me. And I think, you know, it might be that, especially on that second point, my own view is it's not really so much because of any of the particular issues or the particular decisions here, though I understand there was some pretty strong reaction, at least as respects the Gorsuch concurrence. And that I do understand because he came out swinging. And so you got to expect that people on the other side of the issue would have a strong reaction. But I think that the fight here, and I've been wondering about this in light of the fact that a lot of these cases, they're still at a very early stage. So why have they generated that much reaction? There's a lot of time. There's not a final decision on the merits in it, really any one of them. I think that the fight seems to be about the fact that just what you say, the composition of the court has changed, and it's changed in such a way where one side really feels like it is going to be losing a lot of the time on church-state issues. And it's going to be losing precisely because the composition of the court changed under circumstances that and I think I'm being descriptive here, controversial. They were controversial in light of the timing, in light of this particular presidency, and so on. So this is the first decision, this one, and this really is the first decision coming from the reconstituted court after Justice Ginsburg's passing, and now with Justice Barrett on the court. So this is in some ways, these sets of issues are in some ways a chance to refight those fights, right? To get angry again about those sets of issues, and particularly with respect to the court's, what may be perceived as the court's sort of fundamentally pro-religion, anti-secular, anti-progressive worldview.
Well, of course, religious accommodations have been much in the news generally, and for the reasons that you state. And this is another religious accommodations case in a way. And also, COVID is, at least to my mind, COVID is now sadly part of a culture war. You know, the war between, quote, science and, quote, religion, and our debates about, quote, equality and, quote, freedom. And these debates occasion a great deal of resentment on both sides. Actually, Justice Kavanaugh made a good point in the Calvary Chapel case, the Nevada case this summer. He said, I'm quoting now, he said, the definitional battles over what constitutes favoritism, discrimination, equality, or neutrality can influence, if not decide, the outcomes of religion cases. But the parties to religion cases and the judges deciding those cases often do not share a common vocabulary or common background principles. And that disconnect can muddy the analysis, build resentment, and lead to litigants and judges talking past one another. And to my money, I think that is really what's going on in these cases. That's why these cases are so embittering, it seems to me. And also, Mark, again, we have just a little bit of a dispute here. I think these cases are genuinely difficult. I think that the dissenters do have a good point about deference to public health authorities. And although I will concede that the performance of public health authorities really puts their credibility in doubt, they haven't exactly been consistent in everything from the start. Yes, Mark?
Well, no. So, I agree with that. So I don't think that these cases are easy either. And at least some of the Cuomo regulations, for example, the red zone issues, the issue of the right comparator, I think these are difficult questions. You know, and I will say with respect to the Sixth Circuit case, which we didn't have really a chance to talk about, this case involving schools coming out of Kentucky, I actually think the government's position is much stronger in that case. What happened there, just briefly for listeners, is that the governor of Kentucky has said there will be no in-person instruction, teaching instruction for anybody. That's secular or religious schools. And you had a claim by private religious schools saying that this was an interference with free exercise. Well, look, on that front, I mean, I think that actually there's a quite strong claim that the government, whether or not it's a legitimate policy, whether or not it's warranted, there's no constitutional problem, at least that I can see. So I think on that one, really, you know, the other side or the government side ought to likely win.
Right. And I'll give you one in return as a good sport, Mark. I think the Nevada case is pretty easy the other way. I think the idea that you would allow casinos to operate and, I don't know, bowling alleys and whatever else, but you won't allow churches to open, that does seem kind of crazy to me. And it doesn't, I mean, I would say that's an easy case on the other side. But
you see, some of these others, you see, we end on a note of agreement. That's always
the harmony, peace, it's wonderful. But listen, I think the other cases, though, I think, you know, the California case and the New York case, whatever, I think there could be difficult issues there. Okay, listeners, we're going to keep an eye on all of this for you and let you know how everything turns out. This will probably be our last broadcast of the year because we're getting into December now. But look for us in the new year when we'll be back with more episodes of Legal Spirits, our podcast series on cases and issues in law and religion. Until then, both for Mark and myself, I want to wish everybody who celebrates a Merry Christmas. I want to say Happy Holidays and a Happy New Year to everyone. Mark?
Happy Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays to everybody. Look forward to seeing you and all in the new year and to more podcasts in the new year, Mark.
And happy holidays to you, buddy.
And to you.
Okay. Bye, everyone. See you next time.